K-Mud Podcast presents.
Good morning. Welcome to Mindful Mud. I'm Flavina Nickley. I'm your host, and I'm a Zen teacher and mindfulness instructor. And today is going to be a special show with somebody that you all know pretty well if you're a K-Mudder. Somebody is on the air a lot, somebody who's very close to me, and it's Julian. My son, Julian. Welcome, Julian.
Yes, hello.
So this is the mother and son show today. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Get a little bit of insight into what does it mean to be, hopefully, I would love to hear, of course, a little bit from Julian about what mindfulness has done or not done for him in his life. And also a little bit like, how is it to live with a meditation teacher's mom? So we got to hopefully keep this light, but also deep. We'll see where it goes. And I want to remind you all, this is a call-in show. So if you have questions, if you have a comment for either of us, please give us a call. We would love to be in conversation with the community here. And especially if you are also a young person, a young adult or a teenager, give us a call. It would be kind of cool to hear from different voices. How this growing up is for you and what the challenges are and stuff. All right. So again, welcome, Julian. Thank you for being here. And so let's just perhaps just this first question. What do you think is mindfulness? It's such a buzzword, right? It's everywhere. And
absolutely.
Yeah. So do you think it's just kind of a wellness trend or do you think it's a real lasting movement?
I feel like that's... It's an interesting question. I mean, I think it's more than either of those things.
Oh, wow.
Because
how so?
That's sort of like just putting it into the sort of like modern day like idea of mindfulness as like a movement or sort of, you know, the new thing that is that it has become. But I think mindfulness has kind of been around for almost as long as we've been human or even maybe before that, because it's just kind of the idea of centering yourself in the moment and not letting your like mind get too out of control and maybe focusing even just on your breath. And I really think like even, you know, definitely like cavemen were when they were hunting their mammoths or whatever, they had to take a couple deep breaths, you know? I mean,
I don't think
we could have accomplished anything if we didn't understand at least a couple principles of mindfulness.
Man, I love how you put that, Julian, really, because it is not just a movement, right? Mm-hmm. It's also not just a trend. It's not something – it's an innate thing that we humans have. It's something to access that's always there because it's present moment awareness, right? Mm-hmm. And tuning into that. And you're so right. I don't think we would have made it without it. And if you look at animals, right, I mean, they are the best – they're the best creature to really show us what mindfulness actually means. However, they're not very conscious. They're in a moment at all time, but we have this consciousness, right, that gets us also in trouble and out of the moment a lot. So this is kind of what we're dealing with as humans, right, where we have to train it to come back. Wow, thanks for sharing that. Yeah. So because, you know, obviously I want to today talk a little bit about how is it to be a young adult, you know, and the pressures that this world is. I mean, I remember me being, you know, a teenager. There's just like so much opportunity, so much excitement, so much new. But then also this whole like, am I going to make it in this world? So much pressure, perhaps society, perhaps from the inside, social. Like, what do you feel like? What are your biggest stressors lately?
Well, I mean, I feel like, as you kind of mentioned, I feel like every generation sort of has its moment of like thinking that they're right on like the cultural precipice and, you know, they have all this opportunity and it's like the new age. I mean, people were feeling that probably, you know, in the 1920s for sure and that type of thing. But I feel like still, and I feel like I'm biased in saying this since I'm a young person, but... If this really feels like a more pivotal moment than we've sort of ever experienced as a species, specifically because of, you know, the Industrial Revolution just like 100 years ago and its like rapid consequences on the climate and et cetera, et cetera. But and so I guess I don't know. I mean, it's just really – I feel like we're more unsure than ever where we will be in 10 years, most of us. Like even if there will be – you know, if the land we're living on will even be fit to live on anymore and that type of thing. So it's like –
So that is laying the hardest on you, that uncertainty where this planet is going.
Well, it's that, and it's also like, I mean, there's big geopolitical uncertainty there too, because, you know, I mean, free speech in this country is slowly eroding.
Well, we have to get it back, don't we?
Yeah, but that's what's happening currently, right. To a certain degree at least. And, you know, that's highly concerning as well. So, I mean, there's really just a lot from all sides. And then there's also just the personal thing of like, where do I even find myself in all of this? Even if this were like a completely, even if I wouldn't have to worry about all of this stuff, I feel like I'd still be like, what are we even doing here? So
that's a good question. What the heck are we doing here? Right. Yeah, it's true. Wow. So many existential questions. So how do you deal with this pressure?
So there's a lot. I mean, there's definitely like direct action on the problems you see in the world, at least to the capacity that you can do it is very important. But I find that I stress myself out a lot, and that makes it harder for me to just do any of those things or any of the things I want to do at all. And so it's, again, even if we were in a completely peaceful world, I feel like I'd have to find my balance, and we're in a very chaotic world, so it's even harder to find my balance.
Yeah, so the stress is kind of puts you into that freeze, the nervous system that just freezes.
And things like, I mean, and meditate and mindfulness, just taking a moment of mindfulness throughout your day and like, you know, pausing and, you know, deactivate or activating the parasympathetic nervous system. I can't remember which
That's
is the
good question.
One.
You know, I like to describe it, what we do when we take a breath or when we slow down. Yes, we're doing something with the nervous system, with the autonomic nervous system. So we have that parasympathetic nervous system, that's the rest and digest, right? Yeah. And then we have the sympathetic nervous system that gets us out of bed, that makes things happen, you know? Both of them are really equally important. But I think when we're stressed, you know, we emphasize the doing so much in our culture and the being out stressed out and all of that. And that's just going to get us into fight, flight, freeze, or fawn situations. And this is what happens, right? And it's the thoughts, isn't it, Julian? Like, it's the thoughts that stress you out, not the real reality.
Yeah. And that's obviously like the ultimate like modern dilemma now too. It's like we have brains so wired still to, you know, it wasn't even 1,000 years ago where we were, you know, all in hunter-gatherer tribes to a certain degree, or smaller communities, that is to say. And our brains are just so wired to react to the immediate, you know, to if, you know, if there's a big tiger coming towards you, your body's got to pump you full of adrenaline so you can run away and immediately make the best decisions in the moment. However, your brain kind of does the exact same thing if the biggest stress in your life is like your boss yelling at you.
Or your mom
yelling at you, or, you know, any like profound disappointment that sort of, I mean, in today's world, this type of stuff really ties to our survival. Like
exactly.
If we lose our job or flunk out of school or whatever, that could mean that we might not be able to put food on the table to a certain degree,
right?
And like live. And so I think that's a big part of it too, is our brain does kind of have a valid connection, but it's all about like, in order to evaluate that, you know, what to do when your boss is yelling at you, what you might need to change, or your mom's yelling at you, or whatever, or how to figure out your school, you can't be in fight or flight.
Exactly, because otherwise you're not having all the capacities of your brain.
I mean, you can go run in the woods, but you can't, like, you know, figure out
which probably
out your
would help, right?
Grades.
Go for a run. I mean, yeah. Yeah, you do sound a little bit like you have a mindfulness teacher as a mom, I do have to say.
Unfortunately.
Oh, come on. It's
I sound like
that
this
bad
to some of my friends, too. I do now.
Oh, so you're teaching some of your friends this kind of stuff?
Well, I'll just, like, tell them, like, you're in fight or flight right now. And they'll be like, oh, you're totally right. And I'll be like, just take a couple deep breaths.
Nice.
And, you know.
So people are receptive if you
Well, I think it's like, I think it's when you, even when you just remove the word like mindfulness from, mindfulness kind of sounds like a lot of work to me, especially when you're like younger, and it's like ultimately just being like, no, you're going to like freak out, man, if you don't just take a couple breaths.
Yeah, making it simple, what it is. Right? Not like, oh, we're going to take a mindful breath.
And
together.
Even then, more complex things, like maybe like the concept of like mindful eating or like noticing your direct surroundings, that's all very practical too. I feel like everybody's at least stumbled upon that themselves once in their life, being like, oh, if I sit here and actually really focus on my food and where it came from and that type of thing, I actually enjoy my meal a lot better and I feel better throughout my day. But the question is if you consistently do that or not.
There you go. If you actually know that you have a choice, mm-hmm. right? For me, mindfulness has a lot to do with getting more and more choices in the way of like, I'm realizing what I put myself into. Like, right? First of all, we have to catch ourselves when we're stressed out that we actually have tools to come out of that stress. This is very important step is to kind of wake up out of the fight flight or whatever the problem is. And dive into the tools. Yeah, that's already awareness, mm-hmm. right? And I like that. Like that you, the simpler the better, right? It's really, really true. And the more complicated Absolutely. And wishy-washy or however it might come across.
And I don't want to like discredit like that whole concept of like mindfulness is like a modern thing or like there's whole organizations around that. And there is like, I feel like some value in the wishy-washy aspects of it. For sure. And like, you know, perhaps going to these seminars if you have more interest in them and like, you know, learning about more technical terms and that type of thing. There's definitely some value there. I just think at least in terms of getting into it, it's really just that simple thing of noticing like, okay, these actions of like taking a deep breath or paying attention to my surroundings like that or whatever. If I consistently remember that that's like a tool that I can go back to in the moment, then that's, you know, that's a practice of mindfulness.
Absolutely. And so. I think, as you said, like, first we really need to get the feeling. And when we get the feeling that this really works or really helps to take a breath or to feel the body on the chair, wow, this actually does calm me down. This actually does make me less chitterish. Then if we have that experience, that we're more inclined to practice. Don't you think that's true?
Yeah, okay. That's pretty much what I'm mm-hmm. saying. I mean, it's and I feel like everybody has had that experience in
of
their
course.
Life at one point. But I feel like people are a lot more inclined to just kind of go along with the heat of the moment or wherever their brain's kind of racing instead of realizing in those specific times that I can actually reel that back for a second and take a deep breath.
Again, it's that choice. Do we have mm-hmm. the choice or are we lost in the drama of the thoughts?
Again, when I was like a young child, you would always tell me when I was, I mean, stale, I feel like to a certain degree, when I was like stressing out or freaking out or just, you know, losing my mind a little bit, you would be like, well, what about your tools? You know, look back at your toolbox. And it's like, that's kind of what I'm saying here is that you can have these things together in a little toolbox, but also it can be kind of frustrating. Because I feel like sometimes, especially if somebody's like angry or stressing out, it might be even better. I mean, there's other tools again. And I think that's what you meant.
I like that you bring that up because sometimes what can happen, let's just say, especially for a child, but also an mm-hmm. adult, right? When we have a hard moment, the first yeah. part is to connect with the feeling, mm. right? Especially if somebody else goes through it, and especially a kid who can't regulate yet. And just to tell a kid that's not regulated, let's just say you, and if I said too early, hey, use your tools, that's really not helpful, right? In that moment, it's more helpful to say, wow, you're really stressed out, mm-hmm. or do you need a hug, or whatever. And to kind of regulate first with the person, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can access the tools. So, you know, the thing yeah. with parenting, it's one of the things, it's never going to be perfect.
Oh, absolutely.
We all mess up. But I'm glad you bring that up.
And
sometimes you're too fast. Sometimes you want to fix something that doesn't need fixing yet.
Yeah, and I think it's that thing where I already knew, like you already taught me when I was a young child that the toolbox is like diverse in that sense, and that it's not always just sitting there and taking a deep breath. But I feel like, especially in those like harsh, rash moments, it's very easy for at least me to jump to conclusions like that and be like, oh, tools mean that I'm avoiding the situation and I have a reason to feel angry right now. So
and
I'm gonna keep feeling like this.
Yeah.
And I think when I say there's a diversity in those tools, I think for me at that, and this is what I figured out later on just for myself, is like in those moments, perhaps me going for a run, as you mentioned earlier, was like a better outlet for that, because I go for a run first and then I'm too exhausted to kind of rile myself up. And then obviously I kind of have to take a couple deep breaths. And so I think there's,
this is the whole idea about mindfulness, right? To really understand what are the things that help you. And especially for young folks, and I want to emphasize that a lot, exercise, physical activity, but also for adults. And especially for young folks, physical activity can be one of the fastest ways to regulate these neurotransmitters and the nervous system. So yes, go for a run when you do have that adrenaline in your system, or even if you have a lack of it in the way of feeling depressed and down or overwhelmed, go for that run or even walk can just really throw you back into balance. And then you have more awareness of doing what you actually need to do. Absolutely. Mindfulness doesn't just look like taking a breath, right? Absolutely. Yeah. So mm-hmm. going for a run. The question, again, is, are we awake enough to understand that we actually have everything we need to regulate ourselves back to balance? Not a little child. Little children, neither as adults, right? And I want to remind everybody, you are listening to Mindful Mutt, Time is Flying. I'm here with my son, Julian Jackson, and I'm Florina, your host. And perhaps you want to give up your age so folks who don't know you have kind of an idea, yes. Like, what does a young adult mean?
Yeah, I know. I was thinking that too. It was a little vague. I'm 18, so I'm like kind of right on the precipice.
You're kind of between the teens and the...
Yeah, I still definitely feel like a teenager, but I feel like, you know, 20-something year olds would say that too. So,
age is so relative.
But
isn't
I'm definitely, it? I mean, on that note, like, I'm definitely, there's a lot of pressure that comes with being 18, I feel like.
Well, yeah, college.
And people start, like, seeing you and, like, expecting responsibilities from you like you're an adult, especially. And I mean, of course, I didn't, like, have a. Necessarily like a steady job when I was younger. So I feel like people who are like 15, 16 who get like a, you know, fast food job or whatever might experience that already a little bit. But still, I feel like there's that, you know, there's that degree where they hire you specifically so they can pay you less. So there's like, you know, this is just the 16-year-old or whatever. But as you get older, people really look at you like, no, you're potentially like skilled labor or whatever. So it's like there's a lot of pressure.
Potentially skilled labor. Do you feel like adults these days understand how much pressure and how stressful it actually is to be a young adult in these times?
No, I don't think so.
Plain out, no.
Well, I think it's just the sense of like the sheer amount of like exposure to technology when you're young. And I'm saying this as someone who got like an iPhone when they were like 8. Especially like iPad kids and that type of thing, like, is not necessarily the best thing in the world. I think like because that's
well,
kind of
you can't blame
the,
me for that.
And that's the, no. I know that
I did have to
preface,
say that one,
right? But there's just this thing of like. The world we're born into is just so, like, dramatically different for the human experience than it was even, like, I feel like 50 years ago, you know, or especially, like, pre-television. So there's the thing of it's and again with the with so many of these like systems that I feel like we relied on as human beings, to, there's always been kind of like a guiding light, like whether it be like geopolitically or like, you know, that the world's going to be all right or whatever. But now it's like a lot more. I feel like a lot of things are just highly unstable, and that combined with technology and the sense of, I feel like it affects our mental health so much because you can just get flooded with dopamine really easily. Like I feel like a drug level of dopamine.
Yes. I am so glad you're bringing that up. The whole tech and kits or.
And I think it's something that's been very like stigmatized. I feel like the way adults try and go around it with deal, it's like this is essentially you birth the child into an already messed up world with all these weird like factors like technology and that type of thing, and I feel like younger adults feel very lectured at about this kind of thing where it's like, yeah, there's this thing where we kind of grew up with and people gave me when I was like a little kid, and it obviously like kind of rewires your brain when you're young because it's like a whole different dopamine dependency. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, actually this thing is bad and you should start limiting and blah, 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 blah.
What
and it's like, well, wait a minute.
What would you wish from like, adults? Like when you say, you know, you feel lectured and folks, adults are lecturing the kids about tech. What would you wish from adults?
Well, they should definitely just 100% come at it from a perspective of like, this is kind of the reality you were born into, because again, there's the sense of like, it's not, we don't just use technology for entertainment. It's like, first of all, it's kind of introduced at like an early, especially for a lot of people in an earlier age, or even when you're like 11 or 12, it's like, that's the way people communicate. Like all your friends are going to somehow have some sort of technological device to be able to easily communicate. And if you don't have that, they can't easily get in touch with you. And same goes for school. Like at my elementary school, like, it's fifth, sixth grade, and that was when, you know, laptops were first kind of being introduced into, you know, younger schools. Ever since then, pretty much most of my school assignments have entirely been, like, online through Google Classroom, for instance. And that also is, like, that's screen time. That's a lot. That's a lot of screen time. It doesn't matter if it's on Google Docs or what.
Right.
Like, there's definitely a different relationship in terms of the dopamine than if you're, you know, watching Instagram Reels or whatever. But it's still screen time.
You know, you bring a lot of things up, right? And I hear from you perhaps that you wish more compassion from adults and more the feeling of how to deal with it instead of just demonizing it. Is that kind of it?
Yeah. And the sense of like just – and I think I realized from like – when I was pretty young, that to a certain degree, it wastes a lot of time. It's just kind of like a time waster. Like, there's definitely human beings have always been like compelled to waste times in the stupidest ways possible, I think, throughout history. Well, I just think that's kind of like an innate thing, like that the brain likes is just little pleasures for the longest time possible.
Got it. And so pleasure driven.
Sort of, but also just like, you know, I don't know, wasting time feels good in a certain degree. But I feel Absolutely. Like people have always, you know, but it used to be kind of maybe you were just poking around in a field with some buddies and like talking about whatever and, you know, and that's a lot different than being fed all this like just highly curated content that's like also like just sometimes just straight up incoherent, but it like – it floods your receptors with dopamine.
Right. Yeah. So I want to go quick a little bit into, okay, what actually happens when we talk about tech and teens? Because I think it's an important – obviously, it's very important in these days. And I think a lot of us adults don't have that idea of, yes, tech is really an important part for you guys. It helps you communicate. It helps you research. It helps you with school. And then the question is, okay, where does the addiction come in, right? And how can we deal with that part? Just as a reminder, between about 12 and 18, it's absolutely easiest to become addicted to anything, right? From drugs to behaviors to anything. That's the time where the brain is just most receptive to getting hooked, really, really fast. And it has to do with twofold kind of thing. One is that the prefrontal cortex, that decision-making, long thing, long planning brain of us that can control the mood, that can regulate thoughts, all these higher functions, is really not that developed, right? That is actually between 12 and 18, but it's going until 25. That part of the brain is in major construction during that time, which means it doesn't just come in and say, hey, enough of that. It just wants more. And then on the other hand, even more so, the dopamine levels are way different than in an adult brain, right? The dopamine, that neurotransmitter that has to do with reward, but also motivation. It's a really, really tricky combination, right?
Well, yeah.
And just to let me finish up here, that dopamine levels in teens is way lower than in adults. And then if there is a reward, it spikes way higher than us adults. So it's really, as a teen, all you want is just getting that next dopamine fix because your levels are so low. And you know, if you get the fix, it feels even so much greater. So that is what makes you addicted right there. So I think it's really important. I teach that to adolescents at school, it's really important to understand where the behavior comes from. And then it takes that guilt out too a little bit, hopefully. Would that be true, Julian, if you understand what's going on in you?
Well, I think when it comes to just like your general relationship with the world as a teenager, I think I've personally found that very eye-opening when you told me that like some years ago. And especially like that sense of like, you know, that really builds into teenagers being huge risk takers, you've told me. And, like, you've shown me all these videos of, like, adolescent animals. It's the same type of thing where they will just, you know, the little gazelles will, like, put themselves in, like, extreme danger and then get out of it just for that little adrenaline.
It's true.
And then it's like the adults will look at them. You know, and it's that thing of just, like, that immediate kick. Feel like it really just like it shows a lot with just all the crazy stuff that teenagers do and just wanting to just essentially, you know, be rambunctious or whatever and, you know, that risk taking. But then there's this sense of like I feel like technology and like especially social media that are so intensely designed to make people addicted, it's almost like a different thing because I've seen more, if not, well, just as many, like, middle-aged adults be, like, just as hardcore, like, addicted to, you know, whatever short-form content or just their phones generally as teenagers. And, you know, but I think there's also that sense of, like, growing up in this kind of world, it's a lot more, like, socially expected where, okay, like, if I want to get in contact with this person, I'm going to look them up on Instagram. And so if this person isn't on Instagram, then it's like you might – if you're not on Instagram, then you might miss a lot of connections in that sense. And using that as an example, again, it's like it's an easy way a lot of people, like, find, like, they can get in contact with people who – they usually wouldn't, who are kind of more on their like outer social circles that maybe they saw at like one event or whatever. But then there's also all these in order to get into the message function, like you're already like given your page where it might be like somebody else having like a way better time than you or whatever. And then you click on that and then you're like compelled to swipe up and then you could be there for like 3 hours.
That's the thing. And why are you there for 3 hours? Mm-hmm. Because it's so addicting, right?
Exactly.
And it's really, I mean, I want everybody out there who's listening right now, also adults, right? Especially adults. How easy is it to just doom scroll, right? How easy is that? And how hard is it to get away? And now think of you being a teenager and having different dopamine levels and a different developed prefrontal cortex. How even harder it is to stop. So I think for me, learning that myself when you grew up, Julian, because a lot of the stuff is just we're going with the times, right? Everything's fast moving, fast changing. So we as adults really need to stay on the ball to learn those things, right? To then also support you guys, especially if you have younger kids. to really then support and understand what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. That for me really helped me with compassion in the way of understanding, why is it so hard for you to like stop your video game and go to sleep? Or why is it so hard, you know, to get going? All these things is really important. And then we have to also understand we're not at the mercy of this, right? Mm-hmm. Just as you brought up at the beginning of like free speech and all the political thing, we're never at the mercy of things if we're educated, if we know what's going on. And I think this is really, really important. And for me, mindfulness has a lot to do with activism. It's taking my power back, is knowing what's going on, knowing what triggers me, knowing where my hope is, knowing where my power is, and then manifesting that in the world. Would you think that is something that mindfulness can support you with too?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think obviously it can support you in whatever, and you know, hard endeavors such as that. And speaking your truth, that's like, I feel like one of the hardest things. So it's like, and especially since it's like, it's almost like a battle to a certain degree. And like, again, your nervous system, which is kind of to a certain degree built for like actual battle, can get out of whack really easy. So centering it with mindfulness is very helpful. But I also want to piggyback really quick on what you were saying about, I just want to mention one more time kind of about the parental compassion with teens on technology. I've seen a lot of parents like yell at their kids for being on their phone all the time and play video games, and then they'll like be playing Candy Crush all day or, you know, be on Facebook all day themselves. Right. And they'll be like, well, it's different because I'm communicating with all these people that might be business opportunities or whatever. But also it's like, that's what your kid's doing. Like, they're trying to make social connections on these, you know, platforms. And I've met so many kids who've had parents who tried to stop them from being on anything like that. And then they'll just do it and they won't know how to deal with it. So what you're kind of saying here, I really want to agree with, is that compassion of sort of sharing tools and being like, well, you know, me personally, I also struggle not being on my phone, because I feel like almost every adult who owns a phone struggles with that as well. And then just sharing with your kid, like, this is how I do it.
Exactly.
Personally. So instead of being like, you need to stop doing these things and start doing these things, be like, well, this is what helps me, so that way I can actually do the things I want done in life, because we wouldn't be here in like a nice house if I was just sitting on my phone all day.
Right.
That type of thing.
So yeah. So what helps you when you notice, whoops, like what helps you to have more control over the devices and having the devices less control over you?
Well, I feel like I shouldn't be the person you should be asking about this, because I don't have that much because I'm not insanely educated on this thing, but just as a person who definitely fell victim to it quite a bit to a certain degree and has wasted a lot of time in that aspect, I think something that's become very helpful for me, I mean, it's just realizing, like, it's very easy to almost get into like a depression loop with that kind of thing, where it's like your brain keeps thinking like, okay, I need to put this down. And then your brain's like, well, if I put this down, I'm still going to just be sitting here and doing nothing. And it's like, actually for me, finding that point of being like, you know what, I'm just going to set this down here and I'm going to go into the other room, which is something I feel like people say a lot. But it's like such a simple thing. You could even tell yourself, like, I'm going to come back in 5 minutes immediately.
That's it.
But just at least giving yourself, or even just being like checking in with your body, being like, I'm really thirsty, actually. What the heck? I've been lately feeling the itch to like work out. So I'll even start to feel like, well, wait a minute. If I'm sitting here for an hour on my phone, I'm not going to have my hour in the day to be able to go work out or do this other thing I want. So it's all about sort of trying to ground yourself in how you would normally think, because I've also learned about what people have called like cold and hot moments, where like when you're in either, you can't think of how you're actually going to act in the other state. So it's like, you know, when you're calm and stuff, you can't predict like, you know, what you're going to do when you actually get like really peeved, you know, or angry.
That's a good point.
And same goes for, I think, just when you're kind of just like sitting there and scrolling forever.
You don't know what you would do if you would stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And when you're not, you won't. You don't know how easy it is for you to actually get like that.
Yes. Because we get lost, right? Mm-hmm. Because that is that addiction loop, right? Of mm-hmm. like, oh, I just want the next kick. I just want the next kick. Just one more video. Just one. And these apps are so sophisticatedly created, like to the minute little things of feeding you exactly what you want to see, right? And some of the tricks that you brought some up, right? I think the biggest ones are, before you open your phone, take a breath or two. Before you grab that phone when you feel kind of lonely or whatever it is, right? You want to get distracted. Before you pick it up, really ask yourself, is this what I want to do? Most likely it is. That's fine. And then you can ask yourself, why am I picking the phone up? Which app am I going and why? Like, really ask yourself some questions, right? That slowing down is you having capability and choices that you actually are in charge of, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of just following a low impulse and being unaware. Then you can also make a little contract with yourself. This is what I do. Sometimes I fail with it. Sometimes I'm successful. I let myself, if I do want to do something on my phone that's just literally distracting and just kind of like checking out, I give myself a moment and tell myself, okay, I'm going to give myself 15 minutes or 20 minutes, and then I'm putting this away. If you have a hard time keeping to that, put a timer on. At least the timer is going to help you to wake up out of that doom scroll. So use some tricks. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of just things. I love the idea of checking in with your body. Like, oh, stop, right? Check in with the body. And feel your body. I think we have a caller. Caller, you are on the air. Welcome to Mindful Mud.
Good morning. I didn't want to not call and express my sincere admiration for your son and your parenting. He is an outstanding young man. He is well-informed. Pardon me. He's passionate. He's honest, he's sober, he's our future. And I think that the age where he's at is maybe very important, because up until then, he may have been in the nest. And with, let's say, proper influences, parents, and developed character, now he's going out into the world, and it's a big world. And that's when major changes happen. And we don't know which way it's going to go. But I was just going to say that I hope that these 18-year-olds can bring that strength of character, that courage, into the future, because if we have young people like your son, we're in really good shape. Congratulations.
Wow. Thank you, Julian. Do you have something to say?
I do really appreciate that. That's very sweet. I feel like I've had a lot of people tell me that at this radio station. I think there's also something to be said about not like idealizing people, because, you know, I appreciate the adoration so much, but I feel like, I don't know, you made a couple like very general statements about, you know, my character, and I don't know how much I agree with that as somebody who like knows myself very intimately. So I think there's also the thing of like, when you hear someone on the radio every once in a while, not like painting this whole picture that you might not know, but again, that's very sweet, and I definitely do try to lead by example to a certain degree.
Yeah, what you're saying, Julian, right? I think we all have our dark sides. I think nobody is not gonna, yeah. Just like, you know, having the two of us talk here, we know each other really well. We know each other's dark side mm-hmm. really well too, right? So yeah, and that's okay. I think that is part of acknowledging that we're not perfect, to then come out with our strength.
That's just kind of ultimately what I wanted to say, okay, is that none of us are perfect, you know. Right. And I feel like, you know, we're all just human. We're all just definitely trying our best, and I'm certainly one of those. And you can also
dig in to see that you have come, you have like put work into becoming who you are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can own that.
Yeah. And there's that. And I think it's very easy, especially the younger you are, to fall into the thing of like insecurity and not being able to necessarily take credit like that for the things you have actually accomplished, because you feel like, oh, well, I've messed up all these other things. So how can I have actually accomplished anything?
Right.
But that is really sweet, caller.
All right. Going right ahead with the time, as always. It's always goes really fast. So perhaps, okay. So more tools about dealing with that addiction, right? That's so easy. We have said slowing down. I'm curious, Julian. I was thinking last night, like, you know, we're in such a fast paced, changing, like world, right? More than ever. I think we can very much say that. Technology is just every month is something new, right? Where does the value come in of slowing down?
Well, everywhere, I think, you know, and I've been saying that about pretty much everything you've been asking me so far. But again, I mean, The value really comes in really getting what you ultimately want out of the moment. Because I find myself very often, if I'm moving too fast, if I don't dwell on certain things long enough, I find myself very quickly afterwards being like, oh, shoot, I should have done this or that or whatever. And that's ultimately because in that moment afterwards, I'm actually giving myself the chance to think about the situation. So, and I feel like that's a very relatable experience. So if you ever find yourself like after moments frequently being like, and that's ultimately a human thing no matter what, to a certain degree, being like, shoot, I should have done this or that or the other. My big thing has definitely been realizing, like, if I did slow down in that situation, I could have thought of all these things in the moment as well. And thinking in those times, like, if I'm going to reflect back on my past like that, thinking like, okay, I could have totally had the second here. And it might have actually, you know, made people think that I'm a calmer being if I just sat there and was like, okay, I'm going to take a breath real quick and then, you know, go on with what I was saying. So
Yeah,
pretty much, you know.
Everywhere, right?
Everywhere, that's important. I mean, you know, you don't want to get on yourself too much and be like, I should be constantly, like, every hour, like, making sure I'm taking a couple deep breaths and, like, centering myself. But but ultimately, just, again, realizing when your brain's starting to go a little haywire, starting to go a little fast, starting to go a bunch of different places at once, taking a couple deep breaths and trying to center yourself, or thinking like, also, what do I need right now? Because there could also be just like, I'm hungry, or maybe I need to go for a run to cool myself off, or it could be all sorts of things, you know.
Again, like, I think what it boils down to from a neuroscience perspective is when we slow down, we get back into our power. We get back into the integrity of who we are, which also means in a brain sense, the brain gets more integrated. The more integrated the brain is, the more choices we have. Again, the more that prefrontal cortex, the higher function of mood regulation, of planning, of compassion, of seeing the big picture brain, that kind of brain, if that can connect with the more emotional brain, right? That brain that just wants the next dopamine kick. If we can have those two brain parts really talking to each other, the higher road and the lower road, that means integration of the brain, right? And that can be achieved by slowing down. It's for me the most powerful tool, and I'm a very fiery person myself, and I can be very fast, and I can be Very excited about doing a whole bunch of stuff and getting a whole bunch of stuff done. And then I also have to realize, wait, I'm not a human doing. I'm a human being. I want to actually show up for this. You're laughing. Is this stereotype or what is it?
No, it's just funny.
Right. It's funny. It's true, though. I mean, are we actually showing up for what we're doing or are we just doing? For me, that's a huge difference. I don't know. How do you see this? Is this kind of what you're saying,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, everybody can kind of get into that state. And it's different for every person. I feel like there's just a bunch of different ways. Again, as I was just saying, of just having your brain bouncing all over the place. And I remember seeing this ad for a meditation app that really stuck with me, actually.
Okay, I'm curious.
On YouTube at some point. And it was like explaining how meditation is kind of like sitting on a rock and watching like cars go by on a highway. And those cars are your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so instead of like running on the highway and like chasing after your thought, because that's what we do all day pretty much, is we have our thoughts go by and then we're like, oh my God, that's actually a really important thought. If I need it, and I find myself doing this all the time, I'm like, I need to hang on to this thought. If I forget this, then I'm going to forget this thing I need to do, and then I'm not going to achieve all the things I want to do in my life. And then you hang on to that thought and then you see where that thought goes. And it can be exhausting. You're like constantly thinking that in your brain. And then maybe you're doing something else actually, or you have a different side of your brain like going a different direction. And that's kind of how we function to a certain degree, doing our different things throughout our lives. But that sense of just imagining these thoughts is like, all right, I'm just going to let them go by and I'm just going to sit here. That's the ideal thing. And you don't want to get run over on the highway. You don't want and I feel like it's very easy to find yourself just running after a really fast car.
And we
even though you just don't have to. Like it's made seem so important, but if you take a deep breath and realize like actually it's not.
It's a nice analogy. Thanks, Julian. I think we have another caller. Caller?
Mm-hmm.
You're on the air. Oh, hello. Boy. Welcome to Mindful Mud.
Oh, I love your show, and thank you for that. And I have something that I made up a few years ago. The faster you go, the sooner you reach your final destination.
Say that absolutely. Again.
The faster you go, the sooner you reach your final destination.
Got it. And you're missing the life you actually have, right?
What's that? Yeah.
And you're missing it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Essentially, the travel time is just the quality of your life. So you want to extend that as much as you can.
There you go. And slowing down does
that. I love that so much.
Yeah, thank you for sharing.
Slow down, everybody.
Yeah, okay.
Out on Brightland Road.
Oh, there you go. Yes, exactly. You're not getting anywhere faster. Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Yes.
All absolutely. Right. Hey, so, that. Okay, how about we go into, I'm curious, Julian, how is this to grow up with a meditation teacher as a mom? Is this, was this hard for you? Was
well,
this,
what I
was?
I do need to admit, like, okay, I did get bullied a little bit for having a mindfulness teacher mom. Just a couple times.
Just a couple times. Okay.
But I always thought it was the stupidest thing. I got bullied like quite a little bit. And I always thought that was just the stupidest thing. Because I was like, yeah, it's just like my mom's job. and it's like at that point, I already realized like there's a value in it. But yeah, I mean, especially you would literally, I think for me, the hardest thing was you would literally come to the schools. And you came to my elementary school. You came to Skyfish. Pretty much every year. And so it's just a little bit like, oh, here's my mom again.
Yeah, that's hard.
It's just that dynamic of having your mom as the teacher, but also like having your mom as the teacher that tells everybody they need to like sit down and take a couple deep breaths and be in the moment. But also
that.
Like everybody around here has hippie moms. You know, there's that kind of thing. So it's like everybody's kind of used to it, kind of used to the crunchy type of thing of, you know, and yeah, and I definitely got a little resentful with it. Again, I think the thing of, like, being told, like, oh, you know, you can use these tools whenever. Right. And then being like, well, no, these aren't going to help me. Like, what the heck? Like,
No,
I'm mad about this thing or whatever. There was a lot of, like, me being resistant to a lot of it, I think. And maybe not paying attention as much in your classes as I would have if maybe
if
you
I wouldn't
my
be
mom.
Your mom. Yes, absolutely.
But It wasn't the worst. I mean, you know, there's worse professions that your mom could have out there. And
so did you ever think, man, like, please, no more mindfulness?
Yeah, a couple times. I was like, I'm sure I can remember a couple times where I was like, I really hope she just doesn't come next week to school or whatever. Or
at home.
Or also at home. That's, yeah, definitely. Just like, stop it. Like, this isn't the solution to every emotional problem. And come to find, to a certain degree, it is. But again, I think there's that, you know, again, there's that value in that reframing of it, of not just like, and that's what helped me, is like, I actually kind of realized on my own, like quite a while later, how like much I could just use this. Like, it's like, if I don't want to spin out, I should just take a couple deep breaths and like,
so
actually
can you
think,
like,
about the situation. Mm-hmm. I think when I got to a more of a critical thinking age, I just realized like, oh, wait a minute, this is just how our body works.
And so, I don't know if you remember, but I did, you know, during those most rebellious times between, you know, depending on the person.
Oh,
but
yeah, you were great.
Between like 13 and 15, I was basically not communicating that much.
You weren't pushing it. There were definitely moments.
Because that would have just gone the other way.
You knew the point where to not tell me to do my, but it was still like, even if you never told me to do mindfulness, I would still have that little resentment of like, this, you know, she tells all my friends that they need to do mindfulness all the time, so she thinks this is going to solve all
and
the
it's
problems.
And it's like, yeah, and it's always lame what your parents do anyway for a certain time. Yeah,
but
that's
again,
normal.
I definitely found it later, and both, and again, my dad also was a big meditator and stuff, and I think a big way I found it too was realizing I do enjoy to sit and do a little bit of a meditation every once in a while, and then realizing I could pull that same type of feeling of not chasing after your thoughts, like that little mindfulness ad commercial or whatever, and just put that into your day of like, okay, maybe I can't sit for like 20 minutes, but I can just take a minute.
Well, and now, you know, you have been coming even to the Wednesday class. I mean, that's an hour and a half full on meditation. So what have encouraged, what, like, how did you come to the idea to show up for that?
Well, we're running out of time here, so I'd love to share my experience just as a whole with that. It was always happening, and I was always just like, you know, you'd always be gone on Wednesdays. And so,
oh, Wednesday
whenever
evening,
I can remember, Wednesday
right.
evening, you'd be leading your meditation class. And to a certain degree, I really enjoyed, I got a certain ritual of being like, this is the time where I'm alone at home. But now that our schedules are like a lot more misaligned, I'm alone at home a lot more. But also, there's that sense of like, I realize like, I do want to set up a practice and meditate more. And it's kind of hard for me to get myself to do that. And I even sat once in the Dharma Center itself alone briefly because I was waiting for you for something because your office is there too. And it was a little intense for me. Like, that is a spirit. It's a very spiritual space. And to kind of open yourself up and try and meditate and that kind of, it was genuinely like scary. And it was like, it was like an intense feeling. And so that piqued my interest in going to that same space as a class and maybe being able to center myself more in my practice by being able to bounce off of all these, you know, grown people who've kind of figured out their stuff a little more.
We
kind
hope.
Of bounce that a little, you know.
Yes.
And
we do come to the end of the show, yes. But thanks for sharing that. And I mean, there is so much more to say because research really does show that mindfulness has a huge impact for teens and young adults and really can support us.
It just
with
matters like what's right for you, really. And
there you go.
And figuring out a way to integrate it into your life in a way that's not like annoying, because it shouldn't be annoying. It should be calming you down and
nice.
You
know. Finding your own way.
So, yeah.
Is that kind of how you like to wrap it up?
Yeah. It's you know, your brain can feel very foggy and very like, you know, all over the place. And it's just a very easy way. And that's one of the most painful things of life, I feel like. And this is just a really easy way to center it. Just a couple deep breaths and maybe looking into mindfulness practice a little more.
Finding different
very
ways.
Helpful.
Yeah.
Without it becoming a burden.
Oh, yeah. Please not. Should be fun, right?
Yeah. Otherwise, it's not.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Julian, for getting up early and on a Sunday morning and coming hang out with your mom again. Be all well and take a deep, mindful breath. whenever you need it.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.